Welcome to another edition of Our World. I'm your host, Daryl Davis. Good morning, everyone. All you loyal listeners who get up very early with us on Sunday mornings to be a part of Our World, this April 6th, Sunday morning. Let me start the program. If you have not heard by now, we are no longer Hudson Valley Talk Radio. Our World is now on Real Country, 1260 AM and 1420 AM. So keep that in mind later on in the program when I mess up and call it something else. Anyway, I'm excited to do today's program. You know, if you've been following what's been going on in the past few years, we've been reporting on the movement in Westchester County against gentrification and also against racism. And although, you know, we've used Peekskill as a case study, these issues are national. Public housing has been under attack for a number of years. It has not slowed down under President Obama. I know Newburgh has been dealing with these issues, and not everything that's under HUD is considered public housing. So this affects communities all up and down the Hudson Valley, and what we did in Peekskill was we beat back gentrification. And so it's important to put not only put this in context, but we have to answer some questions, some basic questions, because, you know, a lot of people, you know, they claim that they're in the movement, quote unquote. They give themselves these titles as activists and you know, so we need to, you know, we need to talk about all of this, and we need to talk about who we are, where we are. We have to talk about why we must fight. Why do we have to fight to keep our own housing? Who do we have to fight? And how is it that we were so successful in Peekskill against some of the ugliest elements in the history of that city, Peekskill, my hometown? And let me just remind folks, I've been to Newburgh several times over the years for police brutality, for housing. I was there. I was a speaker at a rally there to protest state budget cuts. The same is true of Poughkeepsie and Beacon. And so, you know, the issues are the same, you know, more or less. You know, and in my case, as founder and chairman of the Committee for Justice, most of the issues we deal with impact on poor people and people of color. And so in a nation, the wealthiest, you know, wealthiest nation on the planet, in Westchester County, where I'm based, the wealthiest county in the nation, it can complicate things. And so let's start with who we are. And I'm going to talk about this in the context of what happened in Peekskill and why it's important to review these questions. Because although we beat back gentrification in Peekskill, gentrification does not exist in isolation. You know, it is a racist policy. It is a class policy. It is people in power looking down on poor people and people of color, of deciding that those communities are no longer welcome in their own community, that these folks who are making these decisions are somehow better than the rest of us. Why? Because, what, they have more money? Do we need to really go into history and look at the ugly tyrants and fascists that were wealthy? Having a lot of money is no measurement of how worthy you are as a human being. And so we need to first and foremost remind ourselves that whether you have more money than me or not, you're not better than me. And whether you have a big house and I don't, you're not better than me. the history is full of wealthy tyrants and murderers, and you know, it would take up more time than I have to review all of that. So first and foremost, gentrification is a symptom of a superiority complex, snobs. And, you know, gentrification is just one piece of it. People who pursue these type of policies, these ultra-right-wing policies, they're not just for gentrification. They're for stop and frisk, but only in our community. They're for get tough on crime, but only in our community. We are the enemy to them, and we are their rallying point. We have to save our community from those people. Why should our tax dollars support those people? And so, from the beginning, we need to understand who we are. We are those people that these right-wing politicians are talking about. And while the middle class and the average white person is feeding into this by saying, we have to get those people off of welfare, I don't want my tax dollars supporting those people who are sitting home watching big screen TV and eating steak and lobster off of food stamps that my tax dollars are paying for, you know, while in reality, the ones saying those people, these politicians, it is their friends that nearly made the U.S. economy collapse beyond repair. It was their greed. It was their friends. Their greed, their corruption, bailing out the bankers who then turned around and paid themselves multi-million dollar bonuses after wrecking the economy. It's the Halliburtons, the Dick Cheney's companies that got no big contracts to go into Iraq. You know, they claim that, you know, we're going to fight terrorism, but most terrorist attacks against the United States come from Latin America, not the Middle East, not Muslim countries. And yet, what a coincidence that the countries we're invading happen to be sitting on billions of dollars in oil, trillions of dollars in oil. What a coincidence that the person who launched the invasion, George Bush, got his money. He's a Texas oil man. What a coincidence. You know, so while Americans, the white middle class, and poor whites even, are saying, I don't want my tax dollars supporting those people, who, by the way, if you add up social programs such as aid for dependent children, so-called welfare and food stamps, a drop in the bucket, not even worth paying attention to on a grander scale. It's more important to pay attention, to ask questions. Why are the biggest corporations in America, which are making combined trillions of dollars in profit, not paying any taxes at all? Any taxes at all. If they paid their fair share of taxes, you would not be busting axles on potholes in your streets. Our children would not have to get so far into debt to pay for college, because we'd be able to afford college for everybody who wants to go free. Free. Medical costs, free. This is the type of money we're really talking about here. But we're not talking about it, are we? We're talking about the welfare queens, you know, who are getting $300 a month. Halliburton is getting $300 million contracts, no bid contracts, handed to them because the former vice president, it's his company. Or because a general left the military and then went to this corporation and used his political contacts to enrich himself. You know, so on the local level, the policies are the same. Land grabs, that's what gentrification is. It's a land grab. You know, Peekskill, Bowman Towers, public housing on the main highway coming into Peekskill, overlooking the river, riverfront view. We have to have it. Those people aren't worthy to live there anymore. Despite the fact that most of the people who live in Bowman Towers go to church. A good percentage have full-time jobs. Many are paying over $1,000 a month. Over $1,000 a month rent. Some are paying $2,000 a month. You would never know that. Because the only thing they write about Bowman Towers is, you know, every time the motel down the street gets robbed, the newspaper says, the motel, which is located just one block from Bowman Towers, making you think that these residents are the enemy. More drugs in other parts of the community. More crime. More violence. More muggings. And yet, because they want to gentrify, because they want to take Bowman Towers, they keep it in the news. They told the police officers, who told me, keep making arrests down there. And some of these cops, sergeants, to their credit, said, but they're not doing anything. They're just out there. I don't care. Make the arrest. I want the corridor clear. Now, some people listening will know who I'm talking about because this was a favorite term of a former Peekskill city manager. He called that strip, that main street strip in Peekskill right in front of Bowman Towers, the corridor. Keep it clear. Arrest them. Charge them with vagrancy. Charge them with jaywalking. Charge them with loud music. But keep making arrests and keep it in the news so that when we throw them out, no one will say anything. And if we take too long, some folks will say, get rid of them. That's what's been going on. And so who are we? Question number one. We are citizens. We are human beings. We are people who deserve the right to fair treatment, equality, decent housing, justice. That's who we are. And yet, why should we have to fight for things that are supposed to be guaranteed by the U.S. Constitution? Why is that? Why do we have to fight for that? These are questions people should be asking. How is it that folks who are minding their own business, doing the best they can in life, locked out of opportunity, construction going on all around them, not two jobs given to that community? It's not just Peekskill. It's Ossining. It's Yonkers. It's Newburgh. It's Poughkeepsie. Tappan Zee Bridge, $1 billion project. You know, Target's being built everywhere. Walmart's being built everywhere. We're not getting those jobs. We're not getting a fair share. Instead, we get more police in our communities. We get the war on drugs in our community, which just means criminalize, stop and frisk, charge them for having some weed in their pocket. But now that middle-class white kids are dying from heroin, oh, we have a drug problem in America. Now they're actually arresting white drug dealers. Let a white kid die. Tomorrow some drug dealer will be arrested. Look around. This is what's going on. And as much as I respected the actor Philip Hoffman, the fact is that he was one white man who died of a drug overdose that led to five drug dealers being arrested. Never saw that in my community. And so who are we? We are human beings who are under attack, who are facing land grabs, i.e. gentrification. How is that possible in a democracy? Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. How is that possible? Why do we have to fight for rights that are supposed to be guaranteed to everybody in this nation? When we come back from a break, we're going to get into that. For now, it's time for a short break. You're listening to Al World on Real Country 1260 and 1420 AM.
You sure can't hide, and I'm going out to the ball.
We may have to look. We may have to look at our theme song. I mean, you know, we're country now. Yeehaw! And I don't know if the Temptations actually qualify as country music. I don't know, but we'll look at that at some point. And that said, before the break on this this Sunday morning, April 6th, I believe, and. If you're just joining us, I'm talking about, how it's important for us to define and to know who we are. We, in the context of struggle, movement, which I'm going to talk about what those things are later on, but we're everyday human beings who deserve economic opportunity. It's guaranteed by the Constitution. You can't be happy. And you don't have liberties if you're being discriminated against. And so these things are guaranteed. And yet we find ourselves fighting for the very rights that are supposed to be guaranteed for folks living in this nation. And so gentrification is nothing more than a land grab, just like the imperialists did, in history and continue to do. And so before the break, I was talking about who we are. And again, the we... From my perspective, as a person of color, as someone who grew up in public housing, as a person who the community still comes to for help, for justice, to help from being evicted or from losing their jobs or whatever the case may be, these are issues of concern of poor people and people of color, middle class also. The fact that we have to fight, that we are those people that the right wing is targeted for a discrimination because it's lucrative. If these corporations are allowed to discriminate in the job market, it keeps wages down. If they can keep blacks and whites divided along racial lines, which they do by inflaming cases like Zimmerman, George Zimmerman, Trayvon Martin, O.J., they don't report these things accurately. They report them in an inaccurate way, leave out all kinds of facts just to make sure that things are inflamed and it creates racial divides so that the unions are weaker, so that even the unions discriminate against people of color. So they let so-called illegal aliens come in here and pay them $3 an hour instead of minimum wage, and in some cases don't pay them at all. And then they have us running around talking about they're taking our jobs. Whether they are here or not, we weren't getting the jobs anyway. Understand that, number one. And number two, if they had legal protection, which they're entitled to, so that they get paid prevailing wages, that takes away the competition. That doesn't undercut us anymore. So these are issues that we have to look at down the road. But the point is, right now, today, I'm defining who we are. Human beings fighting for life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Now, who do we have to fight? That's a complicated question, because while it is the right wing that is my enemy, and yours too, if you're listening to this program, that means that you don't own an island somewhere. That means that you probably don't have a Swiss bank account. That means that you're probably not the 1%. That means you're probably not spending your weekend at the Hamptons, And I'm talking, we are the we, And so if we're going to, understand who these folks are, and let's call them the 1%. We can call them the 1% because that's who they are. Runaway finance, corporations collapsing, people losing their pensions, but the president and CEO and chairman of the board are going out with $20 million bonuses. and y'all are watching, you know, the woman on welfare who may be eating lobster bought with food stamps. You're the fool. You're the dummy. You know, and so when the Occupy Wall Street movement happened, I was so excited. I said, finally, they're identifying the problem. It's not Democrat and Republican. It's not black and white and Latino. It is runaway corporate greed and corruption. What a coincidence, by the way, that I just don't see any more articles in the mainstream media about political corruption. Just don't see it. I don't see corruption. I don't see greed. You know, I don't see articles about the corporations dumping chemicals in our water, which they're doing, or dumping them in so-called third world countries and causing kids there to die from cancer at age 8 and 9, which they're doing, which is documented, which they don't write about anymore. You know, do you know why that is? Well, because the media is no longer independent media. The media used to be the watchdog. They used to write about corruption, corrupt politicians, greed. And so the big corporations bought the media. You know, Exxon owns ABC. You know, the big oil companies that don't pay any taxes, that are causing cancer, that own other companies that are employing child labor, they own the media now. So you're not going to see those stories, not in corporate-owned media. And so they become they become invisible. They become a non-issue. Meanwhile, they're getting richer and richer. We're getting poorer and poorer. Where the pharmaceuticals, all of this multi-billion-dollar industry that's poisoning you with cure, high blood pressure, take this. Cholesterol, take that. Arthritis, take this. Sinus problems, take this. You know, and you know, for now you'll be okay, but this is definitely going to kill you in 10 years. You know, not even that long sometimes. Look at what's on TV. Look at most of the commercials now. If you've taken such and such pill and you died from a stroke or a heart attack, they literally say that. Call 1-800-LAWYER. I mean, because it's so out of hand. And then the people who were supposed to be the watchdogs, that were supposed to be monitoring the pharmaceuticals and making sure that drugs are thoroughly tested before given to the population, they don't exist anymore. The pharmaceutical executives are now in charge of these government agencies. This is the 1%. This is what we're up against. When I ask the question, who is it we have to fight? That's who it is we have to fight. The 99% needs to recognize that we need to come together as a multi-racial, multi-ethnic, multi-class movement for democracy, because it's not democracy when the whole Senate and Congress are millionaires controlled by the corporations. That's not democracy, and democracy has been under assault for years by high finance. If you look at the history of fascism, before Hitler became Führer, he met with the big corporations. They backed him. They put him in. High finance, and we're teetering on that. What, you know, the stuff that goes on in America, if it went on in another country, it would be called fascism. Tell me how the government is allowed to spy on private citizens who aren't committing any crimes or even being accused of anything. How is it that the government right now can come and snatch you or me and put us in a dungeon without charging us or ever giving us a trial? That's not democracy. You know, and this is what we're dealing with now. This is what we're facing. So it is crucial that we know who we are and who the enemy is and their tactics. Now, on a local level, you know, it's been said that all politics is local. I agree with that up until a point. But we have always, you know, whether it's America or Nazi Germany, or South Africa, you know, the people who are oppressed, or red people here in these shores, Native Americans, no matter the oppressed group, we've always had to fight against, quote, our own. And whether you like it or not, the fact of the matter is, you know, there's a real double standard here when you're talking about the movement and civil rights and African Americans. Excuse me. See, because people are so quick to say, you know, black people are just not united. We need to get more united. You know, we have a demonstration and a lot of people don't come out. We're always fighting our own. You know, I listen to this stuff, but as a student of history, I don't feed into it. I don't feed into it because it feeds the myth that you need a mass of people to get things done. And therefore, if we can't get a mass of people to a demonstration or a council meeting, we should not do anything. And that's myth. And it's myth only against people of color. Because I've witnessed, and so have you, but because of your filters, you don't recognize it. I've seen one white person go to a council meeting and complain, problem solved the next day. Or sometimes before they leave the council chambers, one person. Sometimes I've seen one person stand up and say, hey, I represent the West Side Homeowners Association, and I want a stop sign. Stop sign goes up the next day. One person. But with black people, how many people are in your organization? I only see 5 of you. I only see 10 of you. But how many does it take for to decide whether or not the issue is right or wrong? I mean, is that the measure now? Why isn't it right or wrong based on the issue? You know, so I see this, but I know better. I know that a handful of committed people can get more done than a mass of unorganized, coordinated people. We've proven it. It's been proven in history. The reason I know it can be done is because it's already been done. You know, the Committee for Justice has tremendous respect as a movement organization, but we didn't reinvent the wheel. We had giants to stand on, people who went before us, people who struggled, won, and lost. We had the benefit of analyzing that and seeing what could be done better. We didn't reinvent the wheel. And so history will tell you, you don't need masses of people. Certainly is not a bad thing. There's a time when you need a good crowd, and when we need that in Peekskill, we've gotten it. We've had standing room only more times than I can remember over the years in Peekskill at council meetings. We had marches where even our enemy, you know, the press would say, over 200 people marched in Peekskill today. If they say 200, you can guarantee it's closer to 400. And we've done that when we need to. But it's not always necessary. If only black people were more united. Excuse me. 30 million people, African Americans, in the United States. They give us Al Sharpton as our leader, right? You know how insulting that is? This is nothing against Al Sharpton. Everybody listening to my voice knows that I know him. We've been friends over the years. We've worked very closely together, lived together for 2 weeks. He stayed at my home, and you know we traveled on the road, organizing rallies and what have you. But to appoint one man to be the leader over 30 million people of different classes and political interests, and it's insulting. And we're the only ones they do that to. We're the only ones. 30 million? Show me any group. Show me Irish, Italian, Jewish, where 30 million of them have one leader. We're the only ones. You know, and so it's insulting. And so we need to reject that. And again, this is nothing against Reverend Sharpton. It's just a mindset we need to get beyond. We are our own leaders. Al Sharpton does not speak for me. He will say things that I support from time to time. You know, in the past, he called for marches for justice, which I participated in. He called for other things that I did not participate in. The only reason that we know about Al Sharpton is because the media is comfortable with him. There are greater preachers out there. There are greater leaders out there. But they're a threat to the 1%. So they're ignored, and you don't hear about them. Their tactics actually threaten the assault on democracy by the 1%. So they don't put them in the news. But we know about them because of the internet. We know about them because the movement, quote unquote, is a community. You know, we know each other for the most part. You know, we know who the activists are in Chicago and Detroit and who the movement people are. And if we don't, we will call somebody who will put us in touch with a real movement person. You know, I remember when I had an issue in New York State and I called David Patterson, Governor Patterson. And he had somebody get back to me almost right away. And I said, look, I really appreciate, you know, the response. It was very quick. And the person who he had get back to me said, no, once the governor said that you're a movement person, I knew you were somebody I should get back to right away. See, we you know, you're a movement person by history, right? You don't just come and go. Movement people are in it for the long haul. They don't jump into it, get their name in the paper, and then run for city council, you know, or run for borough president. You know, these are opportunists. You know, they come into the movement and get involved in rallies and marches and get in the news, and then once they're in the news, they got name recognition, which was their goal in the first place. Then they run for something, and they leave the movement behind. And then another opportunist comes along and sees that this is lucrative, sees that this is the scam, this is the game. The system makes it that way. Al Sharpton is not in the movement anymore. I'll say it again. Al Sharpton is not in the movement anymore. Some would argue he was never in the movement. You know, there's different layers to the movement. You got the nationalists, you got the culturalists, you know, you got different elements in the movement. You got paramilitary, you got peace activists or pacifists, whatever you want to call it. There's different elements to the movement. But what makes it movement is that it's not seasonal. People just don't come out in November and say vote. The movement is continuous. It moves forward, it moves society forward. Sometimes you go backwards and then we start over. That's movement. It's long term. It's not seasonal. It's not something you do for a year or two, get your name out there and then run for office. That's opportunism. You know, so when I see these people around today, and I'm going to zero in on Westchester County, because I watched this carefully over the last 4 or 5 years when we were fighting the ugliest political elements I've seen in the history of Peekskill. I was too young when neo-fascists, according to Pete Seeger, neo-fascists helped organize the violence against him and Paul Robeson by Peekskill residents. In 1949. Actually, I wasn't too young. I wasn't born. And so I don't remember that. I have no concept of that. But I read about it and I got firsthand account. I talked to Pete Seeger on the phone for nearly an hour. And then, you know, I've known him over the years and we've worked together. And so I got eyewitness account of how ugly and vicious it was. And so in the last 4 years, we went up against the second ugliest, most vicious political elements in Peekskill, the Mayor Mary Foster administration, so-called Democrats who weren't Democrats. And in any case, so as this happened, other things are going on in Westchester. And so some of the people who attach themselves to our movement in Peekskill started calling themselves activists. And then I've seen other elements around Westchester County. Just all of a sudden, you know, something happens, somebody gets shot dead, and all of a sudden the family member gives themselves the title activist. Why do they do that? They do that because they want their name in the paper as an activist so that they can run for office and join the black bourgeoisie and leave the movement behind. That's why they do that. Well, Darryl, the newspapers call you an activist. Aha! I'll say again, aha! I was young enough to have never even heard that term before a newspaper called me that. I had never heard that term. I was a teenager back in the 80s. Maybe I was in my early 20s, and I had already started organizing tenants, and I did some work in New York City also, and I was quoted in an article about a police killing in New York City by a black weekly newspaper, and they had my quote as an excerpt, and they said, Darryl Davis, community activist. And I was like, oh, is that what I am? And so that's what would happen with me. I mean, I won't say I earned my stripes, but I didn't set out for a title. I didn't know that it was something, a badge of honor, and it still doesn't feel that way to me. But for others, they want their name in the paper, and they want to be called an activist, and I see them on LinkedIn, and they all of a sudden they call themselves an activist. Whatever. Call yourself what you want. But some people do it just to be an opportunist. I'm an activist. You know, name in the paper. Next thing you know, they're on the city council. They left the movement behind. They used us. They used you and moved on. And so, you know, when we have conversations, as is going on in Westchester County right now, about movement and what movement is and who's in the movement, you know, I get emails. I scan these emails, you know, from some folks in Westchester who make comments about the movement, and they've never been in the movement, and they're not in the movement now. And they're like, we need to do this if we're going to have a real movement. There is a real movement. It's called the Committee for Justice and CPARC and other activists, real activists who've been in the movement for years, their whole lives, that have successes that we can point to, tangible. And I'm not just talking about toppling administrations, which we've done, by the way. Mary Foster was not the first. She was not the first that the Committee for Justice led a struggle and toppled a right-wing administration who was attacking our community. She wasn't the first. She should have did her research before she picked this fight. But you know, and so real movement. And we're not just in Peekskill, as some of our friends down county try to marginalize us. Since this thing started in Peekskill, we've been to Poughkeepsie, Newburgh, by invitation. You know, unlike some people, we don't run around saying, we're activists, can we come speak at your rally? We're activists, you know, can I do... No. They ask us to come into their communities. Newburgh, Poughkeepsie, White Plains, public housing residents ask Darryl Davis to come down there and help them organize. Worked with some activists from Westpac. You know, I had been working with Westpac before these kids were born. You know, and then in New Rochelle, several meetings with New Rochelle residents, tenants, several. Mount Vernon, you know. And you know, and so that's movement, not a book club. We're not a book club. You know, and some of these elements, and I'm going to be laser specific in the future when I talk about what movement is and who our friends and who our enemies are, because it's necessary. And so when I say, who is it we're fighting the 1%. But we can't get to the 1% because they're lackeys. Are the front line of defense for them. They're the ones who get in, quote, the movement to make money. They're the ones who get in the movement to run for office. Those are status seekers. They're on the front line of the 1%. And so, like it or not, in Nazi Germany, many Jews helped the Nazis to save their own tails. In fascist Italy, same thing. In South Africa, apartheid South Africa, many Africans. You can't have 3 million Africanas keeping down 22 million African people without help. So there's always opportunists. So to say black people need to stop turning on each other, it ain't. It's human nature. It's not black people. It's an unfair attack that we should not feed into. You know, if only more black people came out, if we were only more united, those are myths used to distract and discourage and make you think you can't make a difference. But you cannot find a group that's oppressed, that the oppressor did not have help from within. You won't find one in history. There's always traitors. There's always snakes. Always opportunists. And so, these are the folks that we have to fight first. They're flunkies. Now, that said, what's the best way to identify, you know, who the real leaders are and who the opportunists are? We don't have to do that. We don't have to do that. That is already done for us. And when we come back, I'm going to tell you how it's done and what to look for. I can call myself an activist if I want to. I can call myself a community leader. Any fool can do that. Any fool can do that. Any opportunist can give themselves a title. They can call themselves an activist or they can call themselves emperor. But there's one surefire way to know who's who. And when we return, I'm going to tell you about it. You're listening to Al World on Real Country 1260 and 1420 AM. You're listening to Al World on Real Country 1260 AM and 1420 AM. Yeehaw! I've been practicing that all week. Anyway, before the break, I said that I'm going to tell you the secret, which really ain't no secret, about how you can tell who the real leaders are and the real so-called activists. And, you know, like anything, there are exceptions. There are certainly exceptions. You know, but at the end of the day, you know, folks running around calling themselves leaders and activists and, you know, they're scam artists. They're opportunists. They're just trying to use the community for name recognition so they can run for office and be a flunky for the 1%. And leave the movement behind that they use to get where they're at. But the most surefire way is the people. I don't care who you are. I don't care what you call yourselves. If the people are not behind you, if the people don't support you, you're a scam artist. It's really that simple. Now there are exceptions. I know. I know real activists who don't have a lot of community support because they're not really involved in that aspect of activism. You know, and they don't necessarily need, you know, mass support, quote unquote. But when you're dealing in an oppressed community with issues like gentrification and racism, if the people are not behind you, you're a fraud. Our friends that, you know, in Westchester, the white liberals, you know, they meet with, you know, their book club, and it's supposed to be like five organizations, but only 10 people are at those meetings. You know, and so what does that tell you? Well, they're not connected to the community. Why aren't they connected to the community? Probably because they're threatened by real leadership. Probably because they have an agenda that the people see through. Probably because they don't organize. They're not in the community. They don't invite the people to come to their meetings and hear what the people want. It's very simple. You know, everything we've done, you know, before we got a multi-million-dollar community center in Peekskill, we had community meetings at churches. We asked the kids. We asked the kids who were hanging out in the streets. We asked the kids with their pants on the ground, come to this meeting and tell us what you want, what will get you off the streets. That's what we did. You know, and people came, and they told us what they wanted. And then we took those issues, and then we went to Greenberg, and we met with the director and the assistant director and said, what kind of programs can we employ to address these issues? Where's the funding? That's what we did. We did something that these flunkies don't do. It's called work. They don't want to work. They want a press conference. They want a book club and get their name in the media and then run for office or make money off their workshops. That's their agenda. People see through it. Where were you when black women were at city council meetings in Peekskill complaining about being sexually harassed? Where were you when an African-American activist, my partner, was physically attacked? Which was the lead story on ABC News. And News 12 ran it. And LoHUD ran it. And not one of these organizations, this book club in White Plains, in Westchester County, not one called and said, hey, how can we help? No. We're a threat to them. Real movement is a threat to people like that, opportunists. Because they get exposed. Because eventually the community is like, wow, you're an anti-racist, right? Yeah, yeah, I'm an anti-racist. This is what I do. I liberate people. Well, explain something to me. They're calling black people monkeys in Peekskill. They're sending police to break up tenant association meetings. They passed a no-clapping law against black people in Peekskill. I saw a woman on TV saying that she's being sexually harassed. How come you ain't helping them folks up there and you're an anti-racist? Well, Darryl Davis is too hard to work with. Do you think people are that stupid? Do you think people are that stupid? You know, see, the thing is, because I've been doing what I've been doing for so long, these folks that you say this to know me. Mary Foster, former mayor of Peekskill, thought that she can portray me as the angry black man and the dangerous person, and we gotta save our city from Darryl Davis and people like him. But she was talking to people who watched me grow up. She was talking to people who I bought winter coats for their kids. She's talking to people who I saved from eviction or got jobs, helped them get their first home. That's who she was talking to. And it's the same thing with these book clubs, you know, in White Plains who are now running around trying to undermine a real movement, attacking a real movement. Why? Because what we do kills their credibility. It kills their credibility. How can you call yourself an anti-racist? And this racism going on in Peekskill and you ain't there. Well, Darryl Davis is difficult. How can you say you're a law enforcement, blacks in law enforcement, and a white woman attacked a black woman, and it was shown on ABC and News 12 and LoHUD, and you didn't demand that this white woman be charged? Well, I tried to talk to Davis. Whether you talk to me or not, do you talk to these dead people who get shot dead by police? Do you talk to them before you make a statement? Did you talk to Trayvon Martin's family before you made a statement? I'm talking to state senator so-and-so. I'm talking to you so-called activists in Westchester County. No, you didn't. And you didn't talk to me either. And so their behavior exposes who they are. They're five organizations: Martin Luther King Institute, Anti-Racist Alliance, Blacks in Law Enforcement, Westpac, and get 10 people at a meeting. And gonna attack us? Gonna undermine us because we wouldn't take your workshop to be well-behaved Negroes? Gonna try to discredit a real movement, a black-led movement, because you don't have the stomach to really get involved in struggle, to go up against police abuse, to risk arrest or worse? You know, when you're in the custody of the police, any time there's a threat of being arrested or being taken into police custody, which I have been several times during this struggle alone, several times, you're risking getting brutalized. You're risking them taking you back there and saying you attack them. And they beat the crap out of you, and you pray you survive, because they're not going to get punished for it. That takes guts that these people down county don't have, that are lying on us and insulting us and trying to undermine real movement, a movement that got the first civilian police review board in Westchester County. That has been directly responsible for millions of dollars in youth programs, directly, according to the media, not us. And you try to undermine that because we threaten your credibility. You don't want to get your hands dirty. You want a bigger house, a faster car. You want to make more money off of our misery. You want to be social worker of the year. You're a used car salesman. And you have the audacity to say, I'm an anti-racist and I'm for the people, but we're going to try to discredit this black-led movement in northern Westchester, which, by the way, my job was not on the line. My housing was not on the line. By doing that, you don't put me at risk. You put public housing in Peekskill at risk. You put the jobs of these young men who complain about being called nigger when you do what you do. And that tells me you don't care about black people. You don't really care about right and wrong or justice. What you care about is yourself. And that's why you can be five organizations that can't get 50 people to a demonstration, at least not from the community. We've seen your marches. You know, we've seen you, five white people stand in front of a building with signs, and you're in the news. You're on the front page. It takes 100 black people to get a front page picture. And so why is it necessary to call you out? Because you use your fake credibility to undermine real movement, which doesn't hurt me. Doesn't hurt Committee for Justice. But you put people who are trying to save their housing at risk. And that tells me that you have to be addressed. Now, in terms of these organizations, a couple of these organizations have an email list. And I suspect that there's decent people on those lists who would be helping us in Peekskill if they knew the real story. But they don't know the real story because they're being told, well, Darryl Davis is difficult. You know? And so that's why it's necessary to expose these people. Get them out the way. Either make them be who they claim they are or replace them so that your organization becomes something the people believe in and trust. You want to run for office? I don't care. I have nothing against that. We need friends in office too. but you don't try to chop down the vanguard of a community, Committee for Justice, CPARC. You don't try to chop that down because people are saying, why aren't you helping them? Well, I'm not helping them because Daryl Davis wouldn't take my workshop. I'm not helping them because Daryl Davis is stealing our press. They can't say that. They got to gossip. You know, anybody who's listened to my radio show over the years know that I've always invited any and everybody to sit down and meet with me. And I invited these folks. They never took me up on it. They decided to do a cowardice, underhanded campaign, smear campaign, which got no traction. We're going to be following up on these topics and more, but for today, we are out of time. You've been listening to Our World on Real Country, 1260 and 1420 AM.
Run, 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 but you sure can't hide.